The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 681. It's the 11th of January, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talou Energy, TLOU, answering private investor-submitted questions. I also have Barry Gibb, Research Analyst at Beaufort Securities, talking about MySquare, that's M-Y-S-Q, plus Andrea Cataneo, President and CEO of newly listed Zenith Energy, that's Z-E-N, listed today. I talked to him live from the London Stock Exchange. I also have today's suggested one for your watchlist. It is Energizer Investments, E-N-G-I. Don't forget, everything here in this podcast is just information. It's not meant as investment advice. It's been submitted by Mo. And I'll go through the reasons why Mo thinks you should add this to your watch list in a bit. I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website app platform in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on our platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talou Energy. That's T-L-O-U. And I've got to say welcome back, Tony, after your extended leave.
Thank you, Justin, and good morning.
Morning. Is it nice to be back in the driving seat, Tony?
Oh, absolutely, Justin. There's a lot of developments occurred whilst I was taking a back seat, as it were, and getting back into the driver's seat has been most enjoyable.
Yeah, well, you're a very popular company, and especially on our Vox Market site there, your RNS yesterday was the most liked. And, you know, just for people, though, who are not aware of Talou, can you just give us a summary as to what the business is all about, please, Tony?
Certainly, Justin. Talou Energy is the most advanced gas company in Botswana, and we have been there for a number of years now. We've developed that project to the point that we have a whole series of key government approvals and third-party endorsements, and we're looking at developing our gas resource to meet the very significant power shortage in not only Botswana but all of southern Africa.
Okay, and yesterday's news, I'll start with this because the first question is off the back of this, really. You received a request for a proposal from the Botswana government for a 100 megawatt power station, which is it's a bit of an upgrade because it was the last milestone was 50 megawatts, wasn't it?
The initial indication from the government was 50 megawatts. However, the RFP, as we call it, the request for proposal, which is a precursor to negotiate a binding offtake agreement for our product. The actual proposal that came out was for up to 100 megawatts, and indeed there are two parties which received this RFP, and it depends on what each party puts in, of course. So I would say we're in a very, very good position to get at least 50 megawatts and maybe more, depending on what the other party actually puts in their application and how that's received by the government.
Okay, and this sort of overlaps the first question here, because it says there, the first question from the private investors are, the government asked two companies to bid for up to 100 megawatts, and it says, are we now the only company in the running, or is there anyone else in the frame, and do you know anything about them?
To answer that question, Justin, yes, the RFP, again, was up to 100 megawatts, and both parties would have received that. The beauty of it, I guess, is that no other party can come in and be a part of this process. The process came about because we requested from the government, Talou Energy requested from the government some time back to allow us to do and to effectively sanction a 10 megawatt project. Mm-hmm. So the government reviewed that and came back and said, well, not only will we sanction that, but we'll offer you up to 50, and we'll offer another party up to 50 as well, one of the parties that's also been around in Botswana for some time. And the Botswanan government always tries to be very fair and above board, and in their mind it was the fair thing to do, and that's fine. That doesn't bother us, because we know our competitive advantage and we know we're the most advanced company. In relation to the other party, they, from my knowledge, they haven't had any field operations now for some time, perhaps maybe up to 2 years. So their project's been in mothballs for quite some time. And in that time, of course, we've really advanced our project to the point of flowing gas now and getting an independent reserve certification, which the other party hasn't achieved, and getting all of our environmental approvals done, again, which I understand the other party hasn't achieved. So we're a long way ahead of the competition, and we may go through the process and put in an application only up to 50, or we may indeed go higher and go up to the 100 megawatts and then let the government decide what to do, Justin. So the ball's well and truly in our court, and we're very pleased and grateful that the government's included us in that RFP process.
Okay, so just to clarify this, get this straight in my head. So this is 100 megawatts, that's between two companies. So essentially you could, like you said, put in an application for 100 megawatts or 50, and so it could go either way. Is that right?
Correct. Well, the best way to frame it and how we're looking at it at the moment is we're considering up to 100. Mm-hmm. That's what the RFP says. We may even just put in up to 10, Justin. We'll wait and see. We'll go through the process. It's a very in-depth and legal process. And the situation is once you put in a proposal, it all else being equal, it becomes binding. So that's, you know, the swings and roundabouts with that. The concept originally, from our perspective, was a pilot project. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how it develops. We'll talk a little bit later about the background work we're doing. And I think once that work's completed, we'll be then in a position to update the market just what we're proposing to the government within the confidentiality restrictions that apply.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So the next question is, I can tell by the first couple of responses from you, it says, how confident are you of winning the tender process? And you seem quite confident there.
Well, we're extremely confident because looking at all the process that's in front of us and what we've achieved and how we're a long way ahead of the competition, Justin, we're very confident, and of course we initiated the process, so we're very confident of at least winning, if you will, up to 50 megawatts and potentially more depending on what we eventually decide to put in, how we frame it, the degree of binding nature of it and what the government, of course, elects to provide us with. So the ball is well and truly in our court. It's ours to to develop the process, to put in a good tender, as we always try and do, and then we'll be very confident of achieving something very meaningful for the shareholders. Then just the exact ultimate size of that remains to be seen. We have to do, we have to complete our studies and put in that proposal first, Justin, before we'll be able to update the market on just what level we're putting forward.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll have an answer for the next one. Is that the closing date for the tender is the 12th of July this year. Do you know how long after this the award will be announced?
Well, it is a very good question, and it's necessarily a subjective answer. The government in Botswana, for those who have followed the company, it is a very thorough government. It tries to evaluate from arm's length and to make the best decisions for the people in the country, of course, as any good government should. Now, that's necessarily in the hands of the government bureaucrats who deal with these things, and it does take some time. Based on our previous experience and considering this is a fairly neat package, it the way we'll present it to the government is little if no risk to them. I mean, we'll be taking on a risk-weighted approach based on our experience and our gas reserves and what we feel we can deliver and at what price. So I think it'd be fairly straightforward to evaluate for the government, but my gut feel would be it'll be months rather than weeks to come to a conclusion. If the other party, of course, doesn't put in a tender, if you will, well, that will make their job a little bit easier. Otherwise, I think, as I said before, they'll probably just split it down the middle, which would be fine for us because we're still I'd say, at least 2 years ahead of the competition, including the other party, in terms of being able to deliver. So in short, I'd say months rather than weeks would be my gut feel, Justin.
Okay, cool. And next question is, what milestones are you hoping to achieve between now and the close of the tender process? So now, between now and July, essentially.
Well, we're working on a number of different aspects of the project to advance it, and all these will effectively feed into the tender process, which we've just been talking about. So the good thing about that government RFP is that obviously the government's a very reliable offtake partner, so we'll be developing a proposal that is in keeping with the highest standards of processes that the government of Botswana deals with. Now, obviously, they have plenty of money to pay for the electricity, which is good. They have a very, very, very good diamond income, very high per capita income for a country, very high foreign currency reserves. So we're very confident that once we negotiate a price and a process, that it'll be as good as money in the bank, all else being equal. So to get a very robust and professional tender into the government by that July date, we'll need to work on and finalise a field development plan. Now, that will involve input from various advisors, engineers and geologists, and that will include finalising the optimum location for the wells, for the well design, for the layout, the spacing, the gas gathering, processing facilities, transmission lines, and grid integration, etc. Now, we've started on that process, and we've started on that via various degrees of sub-studies, if you will. There's one important sub-aspect is a grid integration study. Now, one just doesn't attach wires to the grid in any location. One has to put it in a location determined by engineers to facilitate easy access to the grid and grid management. You can't overload certain sections, of course, and otherwise you get all sorts of problems. So we're working with an engineering firm that has done a lot of work for the government of Botswana and Botswana Power Corp, and they are, of course, experts in this area. And that should put our tender in a very good position. And they'll basically advise on transmission line options, tie-in, local, where the local grid is best, and obviously the best value connection point for Talao, because we'll be responsible for those poles and wires into the grid. And, of course, we'll be looking at options such as scalability, Justin, because depending on what we eventually submit, say if we only submitted 50 megawatts, we might want to make sure that whatever power lines we design will be able to be increased in size for minimal additional capex. There's the downstream power station location, and obviously our cooperation partners are experts in that field, and we're working closely with them, and they'll have a lot of input to the field development plan for the RFP as well, and that moves into our project partners in general and various downstream aspects of the project.
Okay, and next question is, are we likely to see any reserve upgrades in the near future?
Well, the reserve process, Justin, just to refresh the listeners' memory on the subject, it's all about how confident the independent third party can be to give the particular company, in this case Talao, reserves. A lower confidence is contingent resources, higher confidence with an ability to commercialise one's gas leased reserves. Now, you'll recall that we announced our maiden reserve statement late last year, and that was, in fact, the first gas reserves for any company in the entire country of Botswana, and as far as I'm aware, the only and the first independently certified gas reserves for CBM in all of Southern Africa. So it was a major milestone to get those reserves. So milestone number one has been met in establishing the reserves and releasing it to the market. So what we're doing now, we're continuing to work with the reserve certifier to increase their confidence level with existing data. Now, that may, all else being equal, lead to reserve additions should they able to be become confident with the data we already have without extra field work. We're also talking with them to get their learned opinion as to what else we can do in the field for future programs that will add further reserves. I think the more reserves we have, the higher the valuation that independent third parties should be able to put on us, basically the stockbrokers. So that will create more value for shareholders. It's a very, very important aspect of the business that we're concentrating on. So effectively, we have two parallel streams, Justin, that we're working very hard on, and that is reserve upgrade, hopefully without additional work on the ground initially, but with further work on the ground, we're very confident those reserves will increase. And we're also working in parallel the downstream, I guess, commercialisation of the project in relation to the RFP, to the sale of the end product, in this case, electricity.
Next question is, what would the respective earnings potentially be at 10 megawatt, 50 megawatt and 100 megawatt?
It's a very good question because that gets straight to the bottom line and the parallel stream of commercialising our asset. Again, we can add value for shareholders and our company should increase in market cap, all else being equal, based on historical precedent, by adding reserves. So that's very important. This question that you've just asked relates specifically to the other parallel process, which should, and I could almost say would, all else being equal, add significant value, therefore share price appreciation. And that is the nub of the issue, how much revenue for those size power stations. Now, back of the envelope numbers that I've crunched, really for 10 megawatts, I think approximate numbers, the potential revenues between about $10 and $15 million per annum, 50 megawatts about $50 to $75 million per annum, and 100 megawatts $100 to $150 million per annum. So we're talking very significant revenue streams. And that's based on an assumption, a pretty reasonable assumption, I believe, in terms of the end product price. And we've got a fairly good feel for the end product price because the government of Botswana has published their coal price, the coal tariff, they've published their future solar tariff. And we know that imported diesel and electricity across the border from South Africa is even higher. So taking reasonable assumptions on what we should be able to negotiate with the Botswanan government, we get very, very strong revenue streams. And of course, in the early days of a project, you need that to get it off the ground. But with time, and we could see those revenue streams really flowing through to the bottom line.
And one last question is, how is work progressing with GE and IK Holdings?
Well, the our partners in GE and IK Holdings, we've been working with them now for a couple of years, and we recently renewed our cooperation agreement through to February. We're discussing with them the next stage in the project, and obviously we're working with them in terms of the tender for the RFP tender for the power station bid with the government. So we're working with them. We're getting input from GE, of course. GE is a very strong potential partner to have. Our agreement at the moment is only non-binding with GE and IK. However, that has pros and cons. I mean, we'll be gradually working towards something more binding and would like it more binding. But in the interim, we're also getting approaches by others. And I think that keeps GE, IKH honest, if you will. And someone else might even lob a better partner offer on the table. So I think it's only good for shareholders whichever way we go. And all else being equal, I'm using that term a bit, but it's one that's very applicable here. All else being equal, GE is a very, very credible A-grade partner and would like to come to an agreement with them. If they're fair and reasonable in what they want in return, well then I can't see any reason why we wouldn't do a deal. But also, there's others out there. We're not just wedded to the one party until any agreement becomes binding, of course. And as I said, that's very good for to allow on our shareholders. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it that way.
Yeah. And the last question is, How big is the opportunity for Talao in Botswana and Southern Africa?
The opportunity is absolutely enormous, and it's enormous based on the size of the contingent resource that we already have independently certified. So a big gas resource is worth a lot as you bring that into the reserve category. So in that sense, it's a huge opportunity for the company and the shareholders. And then the parallel stream of actually commercializing the gas is another whole aspect of the business that can add a huge value for the shareholders, and that's all about the very, very significant desire and need for new sources of energy, and particularly clean energy, which gas is, in not only Botswana but all of Southern Africa. So we're in a very, very good position, Justin.
Yeah. And I mean, just one other there. And for now, obviously, you're focused there in Botswana and Southern Africa, but as Talao there, do you have any other ambitions or plans to, you know, look anywhere else in the world?
Well, we've had a good look at the other Southern African countries before we really settled and focused in on Botswana. And Botswana is far superior, in my opinion. It just ticks all the boxes, and that's why we've put all the time, effort and money into Botswana. Mm. Now, the upside for the shareholders is just through the roof with Botswana. All else being equal, again, that term, and we're working very hard to bring that project to fruition. But we see just so much upside, not only in the upstream, in the reserve certification side, but also on that commercialisation side, that we don't really need to look in other countries, probably never. There's enough upside for us here, and we get this right, and we'll all benefit, Justin.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, Tony. Well, every day on the podcast, I cover the top five most followed companies. So if anyone now is listening to this and they're not following Talao Energy, could you give us three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please, at Vox?
Certainly. Well, the first reason to follow Talao is our enormous gas asset in a region that's chronically short of energy, and particularly clean energy. And gas is such a simple solution, with the processes and joining the dots in between, to become that huge new fuel of Botswana and Southern Africa. It replaces dirty, expensive diesel and imported power. Reason number two would be that we're way ahead of any potential competitors. We're the only ones with independently certified CBM gas reserves in Botswana and Southern Africa. We have all of our upstream environmental approvals in place to drill wells, to transport gas and to process the gas. And that was over a two-year process, Justin. So that's a very, very beneficial to the shareholders and to potential new shareholders. And, of course, our upside is absolutely enormous as well, not only with a 50-megawatt project, which, as we discussed, may actually go higher, but there's a whole pipeline of projects once we get the first one up and running. There's gas to the Arapa, existing Arapa diamond mine, which goes through 90 megawatts a year. There's a new 300 megawatt proposed power station for gas. And then all of Botswana's linked with the rest of Southern Africa, and all the agreements, all the power lines are in place such that ultimately we could export power throughout the Southern African region, which is gigawatts, with a G, gigawatts short of electrical power, and they all want gas and a new source of energy, and we're aiming to be a part of that mix.
Marvellous. Well, Tony, it's good to chat to you, and thanks for answering private investors' questions, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the near future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, back by popular demand, he hasn't been on for a while, it's Barry Gibb, research analyst at Beaufort Securities. Thanks for coming back on, Barry. Where you been?
Well, I've been around, been a bit busy, but I am delighted to be back on Vox.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, it's good to have you back on because, you know, you're a professional there, Barry, and your research is second to none. And today you begin looking at MySquare. Now, I've had a couple of guys on from MySquare, and just for people who are not aware of what they do, MySquare is a social media and entertainment platform based in Myanmar. They have the ticker code MYSQ. So, Barry, let's take us through MySquare. First and foremost, why is MySquare in Myanmar?
Oh, good question. Well, it's because Myanmar, or Burma, I suppose, as most might know the country, provides an enormous untapped opportunity. You know, it's now Southeast Asia's fastest growing economy. Now, MySquare's chief executive, that's Eric Schreier, and the CFO, that's Hung Fang, commenced operations there in, well, it was June 2013, I think. They'd identified a strategic opportunity to launch a social media platform in a virgin territory, which has a very young population. Bear in mind that Burma has a population roughly the same size as the UK. It's very big indeed. And not only that, it's about to commence a period of quite dramatic economic expansion. Now, you may remember that Burma's administration had sealed tight the doors to the outside world for more than 50 years. Its military rule economically suffocated the country. And that's a country with a landmass maybe five times the size of the UK. No, sorry, five times the size of England, I should say. So it's a big, big landmass. Now, back in 2012, there emerged a party called the National League for Democracy. And this was under a very famous lady called Aung San Suu Kyi, one of my heroes, that's for sure. And she began to force the generals that were controlling the country to relinquish power, and finally won a general election in 2015, which is where we are now, with the country commencing its move towards genuine democracy. Now, the economic boom that this is creating is quite positively breathtaking. When Eric and Hung first conceived MySquare, the majority of the Burmese population had neither heard of the internet nor used a mobile telephone. The revolution that's now underway will see it take the same economic leap that took Vietnam 30 years and do it in just 10. I can tell you flatly, there is nowhere on the planet more exciting to be than Myanmar right now.
Yeah, it seemed like an untapped area there. So they had good timing, essentially.
Well, it was just about perfect. Now, as you know, with all technology investments, first mover advantage is absolutely key. Now, understanding that only around 4% of the Burmese population can actually converse in an international language, MySquare created an open forum social app that uses local Sanskrit for all chatroom posts. Now, that's unique. And then they're further categorized into popular themes, as it is with normal social media apps, into sports and music, entertainment, that kind of thing. Now, most importantly of all, MySquare recognized the desperate need for regional identification, understanding that even if Burmese nationals could converse with, I don't know, a teenager in San Francisco or New York, or a pensioner in Berlin, it in fact has very, very little relevance to the daily challenges of life in a third world country, and the capital of Burma, for example, Yangon or Mandalay. The situation is that MySquare achieved this through the launch of its messaging service, which they call MyChat. And of course, as with all social media branded apps, the ambition is first to secure a loyal and rapidly expanding user base, and then the operator can channel advertising and other monetization opportunities to make the investment pay.
Okay, so what has MySquare now achieved since its IPO?
Everything it ever promised. The government rollout of national 3G come 4G ready mobile infrastructure, and this was done by Nortel and Qatar-based Ooredoo, that's been absolutely key. Essentially, Burma was the very last major telecom frontier in the world. Back in 2013, they had an analog service covering about 10% of the population, and that was mostly available to civil servants. Since then, it's undergone what we believe is the world's fastest ever digital build-out, to now cover 89% of the country. Just to give you an idea of the momentum being built, Beaufort, when we IPO'd this this company back 18 months ago, the initiation research then projected that by end 2016, MySquare would have captured 2.2 million user accounts. The figure actually looks to be more like 7 million. It is boomed beyond all imagination. And there are a number of reasons for this, but I suppose it's primarily because the average age of the 60 or so million population is just 27 years. So those are young people who are not frightened by technology. And also the fact that the price of SIM chips, for example, over a four-year period have fallen from $200 each to less than a dollar now. And Chinese smartphones can be bought on the street in Yangon for just $20 each. Now, as well as getting on social media, of course, with all this happening, the young people are flocking to gaming, some of which is already going viral, whilst also using mobile payment services to substitute for banks and credit cards, which the majority of the population simply do not have and are not going to have for quite some time. So accessible communication is the key economic driver for the country. And it's not, this is the important thing to remember, encumbered with aging hardwire landline services, legacy mainframes, 2G systems. These simply never existed. So they don't have the same complication faced by its neighbours in trying to update their telecommunication network. Now, just to give you an idea of the potential this has, Vietnam, which is a country, in truth, not dissimilar in history to Myanmar, they saw mobile gaming grow by 125% annually in both 2012 and 2013, and had 28 million regular users by the end of 2014. So having captured a loyal customer base, MySquare is now building revenues through advertising, of course, while also installing new facilities that go way beyond freemium gaming or payment services. They encompass VoIP, mobile marketplace, gambling. There's a multitude of other paid-for features. This is where the money is going to be made. It's targeting retention of 30% of the country's entire population by 2019. And that, to us, looks genuinely achievable. So the group is undoubtedly delivering on all its operational promises. And there's also some light at the end of the extended development tunnel. Beaufort recently published a research update, and it noted in that Beaufort expects MySquare to start achieving monthly cash flow break-even before the end of this financial year. Now, remember, that's June 2017. And on that basis, you can model this out. A first net profit could, I'm only saying could, it's according to Beaufort's model, potentially be declared in the second half of the following year, by which time, realistic estimate, they will have total user accounts in excess of 10 million. And that would represent, according to our estimates, about a 27% domestic penetration. Well, if that's going to be the case, it would ensure the company is self-funding going forward, and the opportunity to power significant user and ARPU growth as the national wealth explodes in coming years is all there, as well as being able to target an immigrant population in the neighbouring Southeast Asian countries where a lot of the Burmese nationals have migrated to over the past several decades.
Do you know what? It almost sounds too good to be true, and you know, because it's an untapped resource. But looking at the share price, Barry, it's gone from like 10 pence down to around about 2 pence. So what's happening? Why has that happened?
Oh, tell me. It's a very good question. In fact, it's quite devastating, particularly for me, because this was one of the companies which, honestly, from the moment I went out to Yangon to meet the management, took my breath away. Remember, MySquare IPO'd in July 2015, as you say, at 10 pence a share. That equates to about £18.5 million capitalisation. And right now, they're priced at 2 pence a share, or £5 million capitalisation. As we've said, operationally, they've more than delivered. I think the trouble is that they set themselves up as an ultra-low-cost operation. They initially raised just 1.67 million sterling, that's gross, by the way, of new funding at the IPO, and arranged for a debt facility through the chief executive's own corporate vehicle, which is called Rising Dragon. Well, this quite significantly underestimated the cost that would be incurred from moving from a simple chat room app to one that can actually monetize user accounts, develop new projects, buying games, that kind of thing. The company quite quickly ran on empty, and that forced them to make two subsequent discounted equity placements and then after that to take up two convertible loan note offerings. Now, this has unnerved investors without a doubt, in particular the terms of the convertible loan note, which the latest one theoretically creating an overhang of new shares at a sizable discount to the pervading market price. Now, in reality, the latest $2 million convertible loan note issue was or had to be more comfortable than simply being forced to make a series of small, ever deeper discounted equity placements. But nevertheless, right now, that is a restraint on the shares. And the convertible loan note will really need to be washed out before shareholders can go back to the pure fundamentals of value for this equity.
Okay, well, talking about valuations, what is the correct sort of fundamental valuation here for MySquare?
Pure fundamentals? Ignore technicals? Well, that's a tricky question, but whatever, quite massively more than the current share price. Beaufort is in print with a price target of 21 pence a share. Now, that's equivalent to a £50 million market capitalisation. But, in reality, it could be quite considerably more than that. Now, let's just put some background to this. If you were, for example, to compare it on a value per user basis with the giant operators like Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, the numbers really do look extraordinary. Weight average these giant US peers out and you'll find that their value per user is priced at something like $86 each. Whereas MySquare, which has, I think it's a little bit more, but let's say 7 million users right now, is about 1/100th of that. When I did the calculation, it worked out at 86 cents a share. So that's a big valuation gap. But of course, all the techie analysts out there will be firing down on me saying that's not a proper comparison. And they're right. We do have to compare ARPU, average revenue per user, and more specifically, the potential in the Asian territories rather than the West. And I point this out because, of course, Asian ARPU for Facebook, if that's one model we want to look at, is presently thought to be about $1.77 per user. And that compares with something over $13 a user for a US citizen. So there's a big difference there. But even that suggests MySquare is much too cheap. Assume that by the end of June 2017, the end of this current financial year, it is cash flow break even on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. To do this, they will need to be generating, an annualized $2.6 million or thereabouts, which suggests an ARPU of maybe just 37 cents. Now, MySquare, of course, has an opportunity to expand user numbers and ARPU much more rapidly than its relatively mature Western peers. And also, its brand reputation suggests it really has something unique. It is genuinely being adopted as Burma's local go-to social media site. So there's a lot of numbers here. The bottom line is that if I pump in the various regional comparisons into my model whilst making the most prudent assumptions on MySquare that I can possibly conceive, a dramatic re-rating of the equity should nevertheless result from any washing out of the perceived convertible loan note stock overhang.
So is that what we should expect then?
I think it is. You should remember that there are a good number of very cash rich, and I'm talking Japanese, Korean, US, global social media hubs that continue to seek opportunities in virgin territories. They want to secure large batches of branded user accounts that are generating cash flow. Now, MySquare is now big enough to be noticed, and given that MySquare's founders still retain the majority, so whatever happens ultimately to that equity is their choice, and they're fully aware of the value that they have created, even if the stock market isn't, well, it would be a very big surprise to me if they were to entertain an approach for control unless it was a significant premium to my target price. And of course, my target price is 10 times the current equity price. Well, that's my situation. I think something like this will be realized. I don't know anything for sure, but to me, it just seems such a screaming opportunity. It won't be ignored. And Burma, 10 years from now, will be a very big, powerful economic location. The truth is, the entrance of a strategic investor, for example, could herald a very major re-rating for My Square. What we have to do is not say we can time that, but we certainly can look forward, given the good liquidity this equity has, for a time when the convertible loan note is washed out. When that's done, the company is generating free cash flow on a monthly basis, this share could be headed to the moon.
Mark, well, do your own research, everyone. But Barry, thank you very much for that and your inside track there and your research on that. And I look forward to chatting to you again on some other stocks. Thanks very much, Barry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, I think live from the London Stock Exchange, it's Andrea Cataneo, President and CEO of newly listed Zenith Energy. That's Z-E-N ticker. Andrea, thank you for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. Indeed, it's a great day. It's our day of admission. And so we are starting trading at the moment, 8 o'clock. We started, the market has gone a little bit up, but the important thing is the reason for which we are here in London, to achieve more liquidity that we didn't have in Canada. So we are a very undervalued company. We are a low-cost operator producing oil at the price, at the cost price of $16. You know that the oil at the moment is trading well above 50, so we have a great margin. Above all, we have low cost. So for us, the oil at 40, 50, 60, 70 is just a question of how much more profit we do and not if we have to break even. So yeah. I believe that the reason to invest on us is that we are low cost, big asset, and able to produce a quantity that will grow.
Excellent. Well, Andrea, I mean, and I know you're quite busy there. You've got all kind of dignitaries around you. But just give a brief summary as to what Zenith is all about. So you have, you're in three geographical areas, but I suppose the most important to you is Azerbaijan. Is that right?
Yes. The focus of our activity is Azerbaijan, where we have a very large asset, the largest onshore field of the country. So we are with a great reserve, 2P. And we produce at the moment 300 barrels already every day, but of crude oil that is sold through convenient infrastructure every 2 weeks in a vessel. And then we will always obtain a payment quite rapidly. So far has been 42, 45 days from the day of production to the day of encashment. So fairly steady and convenient for this type of activity. We have a low-cost operation. We are very cheap in managing this field. And our track record in Argentina and in Italy, where we operated before achieving this field in Azerbaijan, has been that we reduce cost in respect of the previous owner of the companies we bought, and we increase production. So this is our track record. What we missed before was a good exchange with good communication, transparencies, and information to investors. And this we count to have founded in London.
Excellent stuff. Well, you've raised, I think, just over, is it, I think, 2 million today, and to provide funding for, you know, debt repayment.
2.3,
that's right. Yes. And also to develop the and appraise fields in Azerbaijan and Italy and Argentina. Well, good luck with that. And listen, we'll catch up maybe in a week's time to see how it's all going. Andreas, but before I do hand it, Vox, every day on the podcast, I read out basically the top five most followed companies. And so for someone not following you right now, which is highly likely because you're a new company, can you give us those three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Well, first is that we are greatly undervalued, so there should be a good opportunity to buy us at this level because we are much more valuable than what we are priced at the moment. The second is that we are a producer and we don't have the roulette of exploration, but the steady growth in revenues of a growing developer. And the third, the fact that we have a big reserve in a stable country like Azerbaijan, which has 25 years of record of good behavior with foreign investors like BP in oil and gas.
Excellent. Andre, I look forward to chatting to you in the not too distant future. Thank you for coming on. I know you're very busy today. It's a very exciting day for you, but hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Energizer Investments. Ticker there is ENGI, submitted by Mo. Don't forget, anything you hear here is information. It's not intended as investment advice. Thank you, Mo, for submitting this. What does the company do? It's focusing on three areas. Number one, direct investment in real estate and equity and debt. Number two, real estate operating companies. And three, undervalued companies. How many shares does the company have in issue? 123 million. What's the current price and market cap? It's 2.875 pence, 3.6 million market cap. What revenue, profit or loss did the company generate for the 6 months ended 30th of June 2016? Their gross rental income from the portfolio was 77,000. The loss before tax was 161,000. How much cash or debt does the company have? They raised 1.255 million before expenses on the 20th of December. And for the 6 months to the 30th of June, they had short-term borrowings of 946,000. There's three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, no reason to raise, so points to something soon after the 1.25 million raise. Number two, the board of directors, history, and link to Inland Homes, which is a 120 million market cap company. And number three, cashed up and already hints on the website to an RNS to investment in the short term. So that's Energizer Investments. Please do your own research. This is just information, and I can't guarantee all the information is correct, so please do your own research on that. But Mo, thank you very much for submitting that. And by all means, listen, if you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists, scroll down here on one of my blog posts. That's at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. And you'll see a question there. Do you know of a stock that you think should be on people's watch lists? Please click here, fill in the form, and I could feature it on a future podcast. Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. At five, Ascent Resources. It's all, do you know what? It's a new cloud tag there. By that I mean that it's appearing here in top five on a regular basis. That's AST. At four, I just had Tony on the podcast. Talao Energy, TLOU. At three, Dan talked about them yesterday in the podcast. That's React Energy. At two, I just spoke to Andrea, CEO and President of Zenith Energy, ZEN. And number one, it's URU Metals. Dan also talked about these. A massive asset there. Massive. That's not the only asset they have, but they're nickel asset there, huge for a sub 5 million market cap company, and so it's very interesting there when a company has that kind of asset, and also just on a placing, so they have cash, so you're going to be wondering what they're doing there, some kind of development going on there, so worth looking at that, I think. URU, just the size, it's in the top 12 nickel assets in the world, and I think they're saying it could be going into the top 10 with more sort of research there and drilling and proving up with the resource. So worth checking out. URU's ticker. Top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning were there's three in joint fourth position. So at four, China Africa Resources, CAF, completion of in-specy distribution process. At four, Zenith Energy, admission to official list of the London Stock Exchange and placing. Number four also, Hummingbird Resources, HUM, quarterly review. At three, Caledonia Mining, that's CMCL, record gold production from the Blanket gold mine. At two, Physiomics, PYC, company update. And number one, the most liked RNS today on the Vox Market platform was from Metal Tiger MTR, commencement of the IPO process and appointment of executive director. That's it for the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.